Time for another Tacky Talk with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy on this last day of June, Tacky.
Yeah, great to see you, Joe, on a sunny June a day. Hard to believe that the height of summer is right around the corner.
I know, it's going to come in like a hot as a firecracker, too, as they say, the old saying goes, when July starts, it's going to be a hot one for sure. What's happening in your world?
Well, we got about 31 days left in the session. The session ends July 31st. So, you know, the agenda is picking up and a number of things are in conference committee still waiting for reports from. And, you know, I've been very busy on the conference committee I'm sitting on wind and climate change, which is eating a lot more time than I thought it would in some ways. But, you know, I kind of anticipated it'd be a whole lot of meetings and reading a whole lot of documents. So I've been somewhat consumed by that on top of moving the agenda forward as the chair of my own committee on consumer protection, professional licensure, and also tracking bills that I have floating around and keeping an eye on my budget amendments and my bond amendments and preparing new amendments for economic development bill. Perhaps for me, perhaps not a supplemental budget. And, you know, we're looking to see what proposal comes out of the House regarding a tax relief package. And we're still looking at our revenue numbers from last fiscal year and adjusting next fiscal year's projections as we kind of keep moving along. Although I say again, I agree with the analysis out there of many folks that the cap gains and the bear market and the lack of housing stock is going to have a huge impact on cap gains, probably even the FY20. Three budget, which is what we're working on now in conference committee. So, you know, a lot of moving balls in the air, and of course, responding to, you know, a lot of issues going on in DC. And if you've all been watching the news, it's been, you know, hot and fast on a number of different levels at the Supreme Court, but also, you know, this January 6th special commission they got going on down there. And of course, you know, we talked about this a bit last time, but the, you know, the feds are up here looking at the T. And, you know, it's a lot going on. And as we get ready for July 4th, you know, I won't be in Boston for the Pops, but, you know, there'll be a lot of attempt to get to some normality on locals' July 4th events.
Yeah, a lot going on, right? You know, there's the Marymount Parade, the Squantum 4th of July Parade. I know Hosneck has their annual events. Snug Harbor has activities going on. Pretty much every little neighborhood in the city has some kind of event.
Yeah, there's family fun days or family fun evenings. You know, Adam Shore has a scholarship award program and small Independence Day recognition. Germantown also has a small parade and family fun day. And of course, Marymount, I don't do Squantum for obvious reasons. I don't represent Squantum. So I do go to Germantown instead, as opposed to try to, you know, drive clear across the city. The citywide officials have to do that. You know, contain my little 13 and a half-ish districts because we have one split precinct. I still call it 14 just because it's easy to explain to try to explain 13 and a half. But yeah, no, it's going to be a busy weekend, but it's also a long weekend. And traffic is probably horrific today on Thursday as people want to extend their weekend out. And even though air travel will be very high, it still is not quite pre-pandemic levels. But also a roadway will probably be extremely busy as people, you know, who probably already made arrangements for a beach home or Airbnb or wherever people are going this weekend. So, you know, I do expect to see a lot of our neighbors this weekend at parades and family events, but I'm going to suspect it's probably going to be a little bit smaller only because people take the opportunity to travel.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's right. People are really pent up demand. I think they called it revenge travel. You know, people feeling like they want to get back at the pandemic, if you will, and go out there and live their life.
Yeah, and a lot of folks couldn't take full vacation during the holiday periods this past winter because of enormous caution regarding the continuation of the pandemic. So, you know, weather warmer, people could be outdoor more. You know, I think it's going to be a pretty busy weekend in what we consider the, you know, common places people vacation, where we, you know, at a lake in New Hampshire, or perhaps touring another city by driving. You know, I think it'd be a very, very engaged weekend. I think it's going to be a busy summer in the Cape and the Berkshires and other places all through the summertime, just like last year. Last year was a very busy summer period for domestic travel. International still challenged, despite the lift on the COVID requirements. There is still COVID requirements when you go home. I think that's kind of part of the problem of international travel as well. This country has eliminated the need to demonstrate PCR testing coming into the country. You still have to go home. And people in home countries, some of them still require quarantine and PCR testing prior to arrival. So it's not quite full freedom with travel international markets, which Massachusetts is a state that relies heavily on international markets.
Since last we talked, as you mentioned earlier, the Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade, and I know Massachusetts already is taking steps to protect the laws in this state. Maybe you could tell us a bit about the House bill that was passed this week.
Sure. You know, everyone knew this was coming. I mean, they had the leaked draft, so there was no surprise. I do understand a lot of justices have different opinions, so it's actually quite a lengthy document, which I honestly have not had a chance to fully read, but I think I understand where this argument is going, and it's being sent back to Congress and the states to decide. The court has, for the first time in its history, took away someone's rights, which is very unusual. You really can't find another period of time in U.S. history where the court has taken away a civil right or a protection that was granted by a court. People don't realize the court has taken away people's citizenship because of needing Congress to take action as opposed to them taking action. Actually, the only person, I believe, is Indian from California, was granted citizenship and then take by a court, then taken away by a court, then taken away again. So because of the definition of what's Caucasian. So, yeah, not surprising. It was an Asian individual suing on definition of what is Caucasian to be a U.S. citizen. This actually still happened in the 20th century. So it isn't that long ago. So the court essentially has bounced this back to the states and Congress to make a decision and local elected. So in Massachusetts, you know, the Roe provisions already been codified. We did that in the winter of 2020. It was 2021. Let's see here. Hold on. Yeah, 2020. We codified 2020. We also codified Title IX protections, which involve women's rights, especially on college campuses, and included the relevant funding for that in case the federal government shortfalls us on Title IX funding. So we will fill the gaps on that. And this past week, actually yesterday, we voted to what I refer to as the anti-Texas law. We are protecting people in the state from foreign prosecution from out of state, as well as civil suits against medical professionals, as well as individuals and their families who choose to get an abortion, and, you know, obviously medical professions, and also protecting identities of medical professionals by, you know, in this, put them in the privacy laws of the state if they choose to do so, to also, and not just protect them from potential lawsuits, but also harassment. Mm. As we discovered, it has become much more common practice to go after people at home, in their workplaces, disrupt people's lives, not necessarily the individual you're disrupting, but everyone else around you. A lack of consideration that your one target involves splash damage, so to speak, on everybody around that. And also to codify a lot of the insurance rights that we have already in place, just to, you know, just to make it clear that your insurance does cover this procedure. And we still keep the religious exemption process in there too. If you have a religious objection, your insurance doesn't have to cover abortion, but we do assure that your insurance companies otherwise have to. So, you know, we basically follow what's currently done by regulation, and we just codified it. So Massachusetts, in terms of role, we're already ahead of the game. Relative to Title IX protections, we're already ahead of the game. And all we did yesterday was respond to the Supreme Court, the responses from states around us and the impact it has on our residents in Massachusetts, as well as just codifying things that many of which were already there to begin with that you never realized.
The immediately after that Supreme Court decision, the governor signed an executive order. What did that do?
But actually, we passed in law what the executive order did, okay. Which is basically provide protections, again, for medical professionals and people who get abortion in Massachusetts or other forms of family planning, as well as, again, protection from lawsuit and prosecution for law enforcement. So basically makes it more difficult to extradite people to Texas. So I use Texas as the example because it's the one that makes the press. But the way their law is set up, that if they in theory could prosecute Massachusetts doctors for performing services for a Texas resident.
Yeah. Okay. That was what I understood as well. So this protects the providers against that.
Yeah. And if you overstretch the law, like really stretch this interpretation, they could probably try to prosecute Massachusetts doctors, even if they do not practice medical procedures on a Texas resident, if you really want to stretch it. So, and given the fact that, you know, they do what essentially called the bounty hunter law, which allows private citizens to initiate civil suits against other individuals that actually are not a party to this case, which essentially makes them bounty hunters and vigilantes, you know, you could find yourself in Massachusetts being a medical professional, whether you are a petitioner or provider for women's care or family planning. You could go after anybody. There are actually no prerequisites that says that they have to prove anything. So if you're a doctor in Massachusetts and you're just a person that just practices medicine, let's say you do podiatry, well, somebody in Texas could just go after you anyway.
Hmm. Okay.
Doesn't matter. I mean, people kind of think it's like, oh, it's only a limited group. Well, no, this is a civil suit. You can file it. It doesn't mean the civil suit has merit until actually, you know, proceeds in court.
Right. Anybody can sue anybody for anything. It's just a matter of making a legitimate legal case.
Yeah. In Texas, they created an open door policy where basically anybody can go after anyone. And then that will become apparent as time goes along as a form of retribution against individuals they don't like.
Hmm. That's what I thought, too. This is going to set up a whole litany of lawsuits at the state level and probably back at the Supreme Court.
Agreed. And people don't always realize that under the U.S. Constitution, states are co-equals in government. A state cannot impose its will on another state. And the state has the ability to deny unless the federal government intervenes or there's a federal court case or there's some other clause in the U.S. Constitution. The state can deny another state jurisdiction unless it submits itself to said jurisdiction. So I'll give you my favorite example from the Mitt Romney days when Mitt Romney was trying to extort money out of Connecticut to not build a casino.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yes.
That was basically extortion, folks. So, you know, trying to impose our will in Connecticut, and Connecticut told us to go screw. You know, similar situation where they tried to move the Patriots to Connecticut. You know, about trying to keep that from happening. You can't impose your will in Connecticut for Massachusetts. So, you know, there are certain provisions, you know, regarding certain types of reciprocal licensing, for example, driver's licenses, marriage licenses, and things like that. There's certain types of license that's recognized across state boundaries. Federal government had to step in to create some uniformity under the Commerce Clause. I mean, if you have to get a different license plate and different license every time you cross state lines,
it's not practical. Yeah.
It's impractical. I mean, how many licenses? I mean, I didn't realize this, but at one time in this country, if we had to drive over state lines, you need a different license plate.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So if you try to, you know, early in the days of cars before, you know, long, long time ago, right? Century ago, you know, if you're a licensed car in Massachusetts, you couldn't drive in Connecticut. You would actually have to get a different license plate.
Interesting. So, well, there were no interstate highways then, right?
Yeah. And the interstate highway system, you know, post-World War II really, you know, tried to create a, obviously a much more uniform and practical way for people to, you know, traverse the country.
Sure. Yeah. interesting. As we speak today, Jackie, the Supreme Court has issued another ruling that may impact us here in Massachusetts, limiting the EPA's power over industrial emissions.
This is not a surprise. I mean, I had predicted the court would declare it's an overreach of power by the president, and it should be left in the hands of policymakers in Congress and local legislation to decide how to engage it. Funny thing about, you know, things like EPA and GRO and many other laws they've been living with is that a lot of states have adopted similar local regulations to the federal government to begin with. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of suits on the local level next, whether or not their local, the state Environmental Protection agencies will has that level of authority as well. So this is far, far from over in terms of addressing emissions. I think people put a lot of emphasis on the U.S. Supreme Court, but also Congress can't choose to act, but given the current dysfunctionality, I wouldn't bet on it. But states, you know, individual states can also implement laws. For example, I use car emissions from California. You know, a lot of the car emission standards we have today actually came out of California because California is without a doubt the biggest market for automobiles. And it was actually easier for the automobile industry to start adjusting their car emissions standards to California, which resulted in all states following California's emission standards, and the federal government followed it in the end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, market forces caused by, frankly, an economy that's worth $3.5 trillion, which is would be a top eight economy in the world, you know, can set the standards on things like car safety, mm-hmm. car air emissions. So, I think people rightfully so should be concerned, but also keep in mind that, you know, policymakers on the smaller levels and our level are going to be an enormous pressure to respond to the court ruling and the dysfunction in D.C. To implement laws and regulations that maintain the current standards. And people have already been living under these current standards for 50 plus years. So, you know, there is expectation from citizens to maintain the status quo they currently enjoy.
Yeah, you know, we've seen what happens when those systems break down. China is a great example with the smog and air emission pollution problem they have.
Yeah, when I did a visit to China in 2017 as a part of a diplomatic mission, we actually were in Beijing during the winter, and we actually were very fortunate to fly out as we watched the smog move in. We actually had a incredible fortune for 2 days of clear air in Beijing, but as we were flying out, you literally could see the sun not have the right morning color. I mean, it was brown. It was a brown sun. And you could literally see the emissions rolling across the flatlands into Beijing, which is surrounded by mountains, which means, you know, it's going to hit the mountain and descend. Yeah. You know, very California, right? You talk about LA smog. It's, mm-hmm. it's what happens. The pollution hits the mountain and just descends. And up here, when we were much younger, you know, we remember things called acid rain.
Right. Yeah.
You know, produced by polluters in Ohio. Which impacts now, and because of EPA standards and because of local state standards around the country, we don't have acid rain now.
Yeah, so people wouldn't stand for it if things like that started to happen on a normal, regular basis, that's for sure.
Yeah, and rolling back things that industries have already been doing for decades, I don't see why it would change after, you know, economically practical practice. Right. Issue regarding this case actually involves power plants. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're moving to decarbonization gradually, but we're moving through decarbonization in Massachusetts, but also around the world. It's a gradual process. But certain states, want to block the EPA standards regarding those power plants that perhaps would increase the cost of doing business or result in the power plant being shut down. It's kind of, I don't know which one's which, but obviously it'd be one or the other in case by case situation. So the EPA, you know, sales overreach for them to address those type of industries regarding air quality standards under the Clean Air Act. So, you know, it's not surprising to me, they say there's a degree of presidential overreach. And again, I mean, it's the power of Congress and the power of state legislators to decide, you know, as the elected representatives, you know, what actions to take.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, as we speak today, Tacky, looks like Finland and Sweden are going to be accepted into NATO.
Yep, they Russians are going to have nearly 3,000 new NATO border that they never wanted. So Finland and Sweden have always been very neutral during the Cold War because of geography. Obviously, when we talk about military issues, geography is pretty important. Yep. When the neighbor next door could be pounding over with tanks, you want to make sure that you have a good relationship. And both countries actually have maintained a very stable relationship throughout the Cold War into the 21st century. Russia and the European countries, as well as North American countries, regarding trade and mutual interests. And I believe those countries also participate in the EU market system, even though they're not exactly EU countries. So they do have treaties, you know, with both the EU and Russia on trade. But there's also a long history with Finland and Russia regarding ancient history of wars, mm-hmm. including St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. which used to actually belong to Finland. Yes, you wouldn't realize that was actually belonging to Finland. And Peter the Great, through his empire building, took it away from them by killing them all. So, you know, I think people don't always appreciate these long histories with ancient countries next to each other. And they don't really forget territorial changes. And Europe, if you do European history maps over the last 1,000 years, the lines always shift after military conflicts, which creates long-term socioeconomic and historical grudges and impacts both society and economically on European nations. So with Turkey's objection removed, NATO's cleared for unanimous vote to invite and include two nations in Sweden and Norway and Finland, you know, basically control that whole area of ocean. And they've always been battle ready only because of the nature of the neighbor. Mm-hmm. So it actually is actually a huge plus for NATO when you have two new countries that are already militarily up to 21st century standards. They're mobilization ready, and they provide. They actually don't need additional NATO resources. They're kind of all set. They actually supplement NATO, and conversely, Lord forbid, there's a conflict with Russia, NATO can supplement them. And this actually creates a huge problem with Kaliningrad. I think you guys have been seeing this in the news, this little sliver of land between the Baltic states and Poland that the Russians controlled since the end of World War II. And there's a crazy history about that region of the world, but that's the only one word report for Russia. With Finland and Sweden north of that, and then Poland's on the other side, and you got the Baltics on the other side, it really boxes in Kaliningrad, Russians had free passage because this went through Finnish, Swedish waters as part of trade agreements to get out into the North Atlantic and, you know, continue trade from there. Now, NATO has the full ability to lock out Kaliningrad completely. And, Lithuania has closed rail traffic to Kaliningrad pursuant mm-hmm. to EU sanctions. It was something that was planned. They knew it was all coming, but implementation of sanctions can't be like a light switch. It takes time to move through these processes and also secure the rail. So obviously the Russians are very unhappy that the Lithuanians have now prohibited travel through the countries for Russians and Russian goods to Kaliningrad. It's a bit of a stranglehold situation. So Putin sent mixed messages. On one front, you know, it's great, you know, you guys can do what you want. On another front, you know, we're unhappy with you, don't do more. Mm-hmm. You start showing up, being supportive of these two new countries, will take action of some kind, which no one knows what it is, because apparently everybody's saying something, but no one knows what you're really talking about. But again, I remind folks, we live very fortunately in the U.S. We have two big oceans. We have two neighbors that are our friends. Despite what you think, I mean, Mexico and Canada are our friends militarily and economically, and we've got two oceans between us, so we don't have to worry about these things. But if you're, you know, in Europe on the border of Russia, you see what's going on in Ukraine, you saw what happened in Chechnya, you saw what happened in Syria, you saw what happened in Georgia, you know, all these conflicts the Russians have engaged since the fall of Berlin Wall. You can't help but, you know, be a little concerned that maybe they'll come in and take a couple of slivers of your land.
Absolutely. I just think if, you know, Russia were our neighbor to the north, how would we feel?
Yeah, we'll be always be in a defensive posture.
Right.
We've been fairly fortunate. We don't live like in South Korea where you have a neighbor that, you know, likes to shoot ballistic missiles regularly just to let you know you're alive, right? You know, we don't live in unstable conditions like Myanmar, you know, which has a military junta government that has killed thousands of civilians for simply expressing themselves in the streets of the country, right? You know, getting shot down and protesting, and you know they don't have guns, or any, you know, I mean, it interrupts in violence because once you start shooting civilians are going to respond, mm-hmm. throw rocks and Molotov cocktails and whatever it is to protect themselves.
Right.
That's not a message to the government, you know. So you know, a lot of world is much more unsettled, and you know, we're very fortunate to live in a international military wise, we're very fortunate to live in a very stable area.
Right. Political wise is another story, but right. Militarily, correct. Yeah.
Well, at least we're not in Israel. And we're not calling yet another snap election because the government, parliamentary government coalition fell apart. So at least we're better than things like election 5 in under 3 years.
Well, we've been at it a little longer in that process than they have.
Yeah. No, I mean, parliamentary government's fascinating and disturbing at the same time. And even watching, you know, the so-called conservative party, the Tories, and I use the word conservative and liberal parties a little bit, you know, loosely because they don't actually meet our definitions. They have their own definitions of those terms. But I mean, you know, the fallout of Boris Johnson's parties at the residence of the prime minister is now having impact on the Tory party as they've lost two special election seats, and what we thought would be a stranglehold in parliament for 50 years looks like it's been chipped away. Yeah. And frankly, you know, again, elected officials not following rules. We talked about this during COVID, you know, wearing a mask outdoors because the governor's orders to do that. And, you know, as electeds, you know, I think it's very important to set an example to the public, even though I didn't make that decision. I mean, you know, as an individual who works in government, I do think that even though I did not vote for that, I did not approve that, you know, the governor's emergency order is something that, you know, is a public safety matter. You know, we should set good examples. So not surprising, you know, public outrage against, in this case, someone who did set the instructions and the orders didn't comply with it, you know, of course, public outrage was quite fierce.
Right. You mentioned it earlier, but the MBTA still having more problems this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting questions going on, obviously. I mean, they talked about last week about the workforce shortfall. I've been aware of that for a while. It's somewhat of a private sector mentality to a certain extent, you know, the way they address the budgets to cut people, right? There are a lot of fixed cost. Inflation's affecting all of us. It does affect the T. You know, it is an energy-heavy usage on electricity and fuel. So obviously, you know, the fares haven't gone up, but the price of energy's gone up.
Yeah.
So workforce shortage is like to have the same challenge, and workforce shortage like everybody else at the moment. You know, unemployment extremely low. And some folks have left the workforce permanently. And some folks didn't wait for COVID to end, or more accurately, it did, COVID lockdowns to end.
Mm-hmm.
Just moved on to other professions. And, you know, the government is no different from any other industry that has these workforce problems. But the troubling issue regarding the cars themselves, the Orange and Red Line, regarding their construction and now delay on implementation because of safety standards is very troubling. And also, you know, how does the T monitor public safety on their own stations? And, you know, we had yet another youth attack in front of South Station. And, you know, what are we doing about security? Not in a sense that you need, like, you know, armed guards everywhere, but I mean, you know, proper eyes on the street to send a message, you know, there's deterrence here that you shouldn't, you know, do something stupid. And, you know, I do think it's going to be a hot summer, and, you know, a lot of things come with a hot summer.
Usually bad things, especially late at night, especially at public transit stations on the weekends after the bars let out.
I'm fully aware that North Quincy and Walston stations during the harder times of the year, you know, there's been muggings and so forth, not at the station, but in geography, which, and they time their muggings and whatnot and with the train schedule. So they get on the train immediately ahead of the T cops and the local cops. So, you know, I think we're going to see greater patrols, hopefully. And maybe we'll get another camera substation down here at some point, because they put them up in the past. And of course, the Braintree Social Plaza, the Braintree Police actually have accepted a presence. I did a drive through the other night because I had to stop at a Target because North Quincy Target didn't have what I have. Thankfully, we have the internet. I can see what's where, so I can go to the right Target. But yeah, you know, I noticed that, you know, police cameras and whatnot are higher presence at the plaza. So, you know, I think law enforcement's on top of that stuff.
Right. And they're things, you know, staffing issues themselves. There's a lot of retirements, a lot of attrition happening right now in the public safety field, as well as, you know, the transportation field.
Yeah, the MBTA in particular, I think people keep misunderstanding, is that, you know, they're flush with dough. I mean, you know, 25% of their revenue is tied to ridership.
Mm.
And 25, the ridership fares are subsidized by the other 75%. You're not actually paying market rate for the MBTA.
No, you'd never be able to afford it otherwise.
So, I mean, the T has put in billions of dollars of infrastructure improvement, which is wonderful. You know, T stations have been upgraded. Walston T is an example of that. But, I mean, we're still waiting for these new train cars, which have been a long-term investment. And, of course, staffing is also a long-term investment. And, you know, there's got to be some good questions to the governor, who is apparently now playing dodge and weave after saying he would take the reins on this. Good to be on your last term of office, right? you know, regarding the T, and you know, I do expect the legislature to hold some oversight hearings this summertime about the T and you know, a lot of resources provided. So, what happened?
Yeah, that's going to be the question. And you know, to his credit, the general manager doesn't shy away from those questions. So I'd give him credit for that.
Yeah, I give him a lot of credit for that. He does not shy away from questions. He does step forward and talk about these things. We can agree to disagree about some of these issues, but he is definitely one of those guys that just faces it heads on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all know there's going to be a new governor administration next year, and we'll see where the T goes next. But, you know, we've actually had some more consistent leadership at MBTA for the last several years. So to say just poor things about the T, but, you know, for better or for worse, there's been consistent leadership. You know, like I said, we've seen some real results regarding more modernization, more capital improvements. But the staffing issue is a legit question. And, you know, we all have continued questions about their ability to, pay their own bills.
Right.
Inflation does help the sales tax. They do get one penny of the sales tax when you go buy things. So that should help them out a little bit. But again, consumers, jumping to inflation, consumers going to reach a point where, you know, people like myself, I'm a coupon clipper to start with, but now I'm really stretching my luck trying to figure out how to get the best deal, right? And, you know, that will actually impact the T as consumer spending starts to rein in a bit as people are trying to figure out how to get the best deal.
Yeah. Do you think that the legislature will act on the governor's tax relief proposal this session, Tacky?
We will have some kind of proposal for tax relief this year. It won't be the governor's entirely.
Right.
No, we are interested in targeting more working class folks issues. You know, I talked before about the past, about the possibility of something like rent deduction increase. We're looking into earning income tax credit again. You know, I'm interested in things like a child tax credit. So, you know, stuff that actually has an impact on working families directly. We are a flat tax state, although the ballot question is November. You guys will all decide whether or not we should have a tiered system for everyone making over $1 million a year. But that's up to you voters. You can decide if you want to do that. But right now, we're not working with any presumptions of future revenue. We're working with presumptions of what we got now. And, you know, Speaker's already said multiple times he'd like to change the state tax because it's screwed up. You should have a proper estate tax deduction like everybody else in the country. as opposed to a weird deduction only if you're under $1 million in the state. So, we'll look to fix that. And, and I said before, revenues are never guaranteed. People think it's always up, but we live in a zigzag world in revenues. And capital gains is terrible. I said earlier, real estate transactions are not good right now. Right. So, we got to be ready to shift gears in FY24.
Time will tell. Exactly. Yeah. Can we talk about a little bit about upcoming events in the city? August Moon is not too far off, actually.
Yeah, I believe it's August 21st, that Sunday. It's the week after Chinatown's August Moon, June 14th. Folks at Quincy Resources will, again, I believe, in front of Quincy High School at Cotton Street. It'll be hopefully a full size event this year as opposed to kind of a 50% size last year. And, it's a premier event in August in Quincy. There's less activity in general in August, the sleepy days of August, as people get ready to send their kids to college and a little last minute trips before Labor Day hits. And also be quite a bit of a campaign season as we head towards the state primary races right after Labor Day on September 6th. So, it'll be good. And obviously we talk about July 4th a bit. But after we get past July 4th, we do get to kind of a lull until we get to August as people have, used up that part of vacation time and, planning out the rest of the summer.
Great. I was reading a story this morning about tourism on the Cape, and some business owners are cautiously optimistic, but they still don't feel that we're completely pre-pandemic visitation yet.
Again, the lack of foreign visitors doesn't help.
Yeah,
and they still have a workforce shortage because they actually rely on immigrant workers. Given the challenges in people's home countries and pandemic and different vaccination rates and different health standards, how much risk is an employer going to have the potential of having employees bringing COVID?
Mm.
What is employers' risk tolerance that you bring in employees that may be ill and infect your workforce?
Then you're shut down completely. Yeah.
Yeah. Omicron definitely has a lower death rate. If you're unvaccinated, it's still more dangerous than if you are vaccinated. However, I've had friends, and I think you have as well as everyone else listening, who pick up Omicron. And, depending on how old you are and your physical health and things like that, the impact can last, a few days or a few weeks. It's relatively unpredictable. And the thing that's really helping us now, not just vaccines, but it's treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have antivirals. We didn't have the number of different therapies that are available today that we had in 2020.
Right.
That helps address the death count, but doesn't address the infection rate. So again, vaccination is still the best way to reduce the possibility of infection. And if you do get infected, reduce the possibility of being hospitalized.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we haven't seen this take hold in nursing homes, long-term care facilities like it initially did. That was really where the devastating impact was, the original virus.
Yeah, over 60% plus were folks that were heavily immune compromised and senior citizens who are particularly those who are in locations where disease can spread quickly because of proximity. But I also remind folks, one third of the population that died were not senior citizens.
Mm.
And admittedly, if you're under 30, your odds are better than those over 30. And you and I are in the areas where the odds work against us.
Yes, every day.
Every day, we're far from 30 years old. It works against us as we age. So, COVID is being managed. But I always say again and again, wasn't acceptable death rate to the public, right? Still in double digit death rates. I've not seen a zero number in quite some time. It's not just here. It's a lot everywhere in the world who's moving to live with this virus, accepting a certain degree of death rates and certain degree of hospitalizations, certain degree of resources, and our healthcare systems is being consumed that could be used for other life-saving things like medical procedures and others. And, you know, and also gobbling up, you know, our medicines and other supplies, right? I mean, it's going to consume more medical supplies.
Yes, and the workforce shortage is also affecting the healthcare industry. So they're burning the candle on both ends.
Well, burnout is real. You know, we talked about the impact of mental health regarding COVID. Obviously, we've felt it ourselves. But, you know, those who are in the front lines, especially in healthcare, are watching, you know, people trying to save lives. Mm-hmm. And then, unfortunately, unable to save some lives. And it isn't just that person, but also interacting with the family of that person that passes away and interacting with family that is a person that's severely ill, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of emotional and mental drain. And not surprising, people left the healthcare workforce as a result of that. And I think people underappreciate the emotional toll it has, not just doing the work, but also addressing questions for the family, trying to comfort the family, trying to give advice on next steps of care to our family if you have long COVID. It's a lot of pressure.
It is, and that's not their area of expertise. They haven't been trained in that poor part of healthcare.
And also the volume.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, a couple of families. We're talking about dealing with tens and tens and tens of families per week. And, you know, even now, you know, hospitalization rate is much lower than it was during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I mean, you still got to deal with tens and tens of families, you know, talking about their loved one in intensive care and, you know, what we're going to do next and the emotional toll it has on those families, which obviously healthcare providers feel as well.
Yep, absolutely. Well, on that happy note, Jackie.
We never end on a happy note. We should start doing knock-knock jokes towards the end of these calls or something.
Just to give something to look forward to at the end.
I know things are tough. I mean, I understand inflation is high. I understand the impact of fuel prices. I do understand all that. I feel the same feeling that everyone else does. I said before, I mean, I like to clip coupons. I am now clipping heavily, trying to figure out how to maximize my dollar like everyone else. And, you know, again, in summertime, you know, natural light is here. You know, do encourage people to keep the lights off and whatnot. Energy prices are high. I've been monitoring that on my Icelandic app, looking at the price structure. And we're peaking at the moment because of heavy use. And this weekend's going to be another heavy use electricity, again, during the daytime, especially. So you're going to do things like do your laundry at night if you could, because, you know, the load is lighter at night on electrical grid, and the prices tend to be a little bit low in the evening. But at the same time, though, I mean, you know, we live in a stable environment. I mean, relatively speaking, we don't have war knocking on our doorsteps, like literally like knocking on your doorstep. And we still have the ability to help people that other countries don't have the resources to help people.
It's always helpful to count your blessings, definitely. You know, if it really helps, write them down, you know, and then you'll see how really fortunate most of us are.
Yeah, we have the ability to choose our necessities and choose our desires. Some places don't have that. They're forced into trying to decide their necessities. And if your home's been bombed by Russians or your family taken away as political prisoners, you know, it changes your approach, mm-hmm. you know, how you look at how life works because of changing priorities.
Hey, saying we're talking about costs of living, let me tap into your past telecommunications expertise. I was notified by my wireless carrier, I'm sure a lot of folks were, that there's going to be an economic impact adjustment surcharge to the tune of like an extra $6 a month.
If you got a fixed contract with your provider, they have to honor your fixed contract. You really should pressure them not to do so. If you got a complaint, you can put a complaint into the Federal Trade Commission. You can contact your federal officials, congressional officials on how to do that. But, you know, asking, putting complaints to the local Department of Telecommunications at the state level, it's always good to register your consumer complaints in both areas. Consumer choice is really available. I mean, if you end of contract and they try to, you know, hit you over a larger contract, you know, you should shop. And, you know, even though we have less providers and now because of mergers, doesn't mean the price war is over. They're going to compete. as they are trying to attract customers with more incentives, whether it be like getting like Disney Plus or Netflix or whatever, or giving you free phones or discounted phones. Definitely shop around. Also look at what the plan is. If you're not using all those services, then why do you have them at all?
It's a good point. Yeah, it's true. And,
if you are low income or senior, definitely look at the government program regarding giving at least one discounted phone line for nowadays cell phones, but used to be landlines. Now with cell phone lines, you can only have one or the other, the cell phone or the land, but real estate needs a cell phone. You won't get as great service in terms of speed, but you get discounted rate. And we try and get your kids under control. Prepaid phone cards are pretty. We've done this before with Justin. We have prepaid phone cards. You know, when he was much younger, was a very much a dollar saver.
Oh yeah.
Need to control usage, right? So, telecommunication services are deregulated. The state has no control really over telecommunication services regarding rates. Federal government doesn't have a lot of control over the rates. However, consumer complaints can put a lot of pressure against price competition.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what works for you. I'm a T-Mobile customer that was a Sprint customer. Under the merger, T-Mobile has to maintain those contracts for 3 years from February 2020. So the next time T-Mobile can charge after my bill will be 2023. So I got a little bit of protection as well as the Sprint customers for a little while longer. If you have problems with that, definitely call your provider and complain.
Okay. I'll tell them Tacky sent me.
Exactly. Absolutely. Go for it. See, they're going to get some poor customer service person is going to be very baffled when you say that. But go ahead. Why not? See if it gets you
anything. That's if I can get through to them.
But take advantage of the price competition. Even like I said, less providers are now available. It doesn't mean they're not trying to steal customers from each other. There is a critical mass. I think you guys all figure it out. You see how many cell phones are out there, whether it be work, personal, or some combination. There's a point where there is no more new customers in the sense that people don't have cell phones unless you're a child.
Right.
Yeah. Translation, you got to steal customers from somewhere else, which means price wars.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, it's true. And it's a great point that you made about what do you actually need in terms of service. A lot of people just set something up and never look at it again. So.
Yeah, obviously my phone is heavily used for work purposes. I do pay for that out of pocket. Honestly, I think my phone's really used probably more than 70% work-related than anything else. On a family plan with my brother and my mom and everyone else trying to figure out what the best deal is. But that was actually one of the conversations, like, what do you really need?
Yep.
And nature of my job requires actually a more expensive plan. But someone doesn't use nearly as much than we do. So she could opt to much more lower plan, and she doesn't need nearly as sophisticated a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you don't have to buy the greatest, newest thing.
You don't need a Cadillac when a Ford will do the job.
Exactly. So cell phones are the same way.
Yeah.
Really look at what you actually need. And of course, the cell phone's going to drop dead on you. Clearly, replace it. But look at what's out there in the market. I mean, you don't need the top of the notch.
On that happy note, that's a happier note.
Some consumer advice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Speaking of phones, how do we get a hold of you, Tacky?
Well, the landline's available at the office, 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. This is a new cell phone, landline phone to the office. It's been there for a couple of months, but people keep calling the old number, which I understand. It's the same number I've had for 5 years. So but they changed the phone lines around the State House, and room 42 at the State House is open. So, people can come to her to say, oh, it's the summertime. If you have nowhere else to go, please visit the State House. I mean, I always encourage people to visit. And if you're, going to be in the summertime, want to say hello, definitely call the office to let me know in advance. As you can see, I'm still in my dining room because people like Zoom meetings. They like Zoom meetings. I can't explain this. Other than the fact that when people call for a meeting, this is the format they're asking for. Yeah.
Well, you can't beat the convenience of it,
No, I try to accommodate people who want to see me the best I can. And this is still 9 times out of 10 the preference. But if you're around the state housing over 42, give us a heads up. And of course, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, you know, is the state house email. Again, folks, I prioritize people's issues before I deal with policy ones. I do read your policy emails. I do see them coming in bulk. I do know which ones like form ones. I do know which ones are individual ones. I'm very aware. But I mean, also do read all the documentation I'm getting for the conference committee right now, which is in the hundreds. So I'm trying to find as much time to read all people's testimonies, as well as, you know, your policy issues. But I do, and the staff together, prioritize folks that aren't having immediate personal needs right away. And, you know, State Rose on Tacky Chan Facebook, as well as at Tacky Chan Twitter, where you continue to put information up, mostly useful information for you that's helpful. And then, you know, we have the take state, we have tackychan.org, which does need some updating, but it's mostly a resource for phone numbers. And, you know, obviously, you know, Keyway TV here, and we'll be putting up more press releases as, you know, start to come to some conclusion or some legislation into the Quincy Sun as well. We'll give a plug to Bob Bosworth.
Oh, sure.
You know, to the Quincy Sun. Bob, please print our stuff. If you're listening, Bob, print my press releases, please. But yeah, I mean, we're obviously going to see much more activity from the legislature, both the Senate and the House, and articles in the Quincy Sun as well. And but everything will be what you see on the evening news as we do here on QATV. We will provide some fleshing out of stuff you see in 3-minute sound bites in the news, but also, you know, talk about other things in general. And I'm also plugged the House Net Bulletin as well. People often ask me, do I have a newsletter I send out? I actually do have a monthly newsletter as part of the House Net Bulletin. I think it's like $10 a year for a subscription. Supports a local organization. Just look them up on Facebook. They have a website as well. And, you know, if you're looking to get a, you know, participate in getting a newsletter for me through the housing program, you know, I strongly encourage you to do that.
Okay, very good. Next time we chat, it'll be July.
It'll be July. It'll be dog days of summer. And I look forward to seeing you hopefully another week, pending the schedule. I anticipate the speaker will accelerate the schedule on how many days a week we're going to be doing sessions. So, you know, we might have some breaks in the time we have together.
Okay, well, I'll work with your office, and I'm sure we'll be able to figure something out at least a couple of times in July.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Tacky.
Sure thing. Take care.